Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I come in special on a Friday night, no special introduction, no Mark is here to take over for nothing.
No, you're pretty typical. You're not very special.
Oh, that's right. Daryl's usually on.
Yeah, Daryl's going. Now, Daryl's doing something special.
The co-hosts don't even know I'm not supposed to be here.
Daryl is doing something special. He is running a marathon tomorrow for the first time in his life. He is like Iron Man. The guy's had an incredible transformation. You want to talk about special and dynamic, Daryl W. Perry. He's your guy.
I've been on both of my days off this week.
Oh, that's really going out of your way.
Speaking of marathons.
You came in last night because you were bored at home.
I was not. I was coming back from jiu-jitsu class.
You didn't want to be bored at home.
Well,
you knew there was an open seat. You were listening to the show. You heard that Heather didn't show up, and you said, I'd want to come in and be on the radio.
All of those facts are inaccurate.
What should I say to make them accurate? Because they got to be close.
I generally stop by on a Thursday.
Do you?
Heather wasn't here. So I sat in that chair. Daryl asked me if I wanted to have the microphone turned on.
Yeah. All right. Kramer is not, this isn't his first time attacking Bitcoin. I'm not intimately familiar with the man's show or whatever. I know he's kind of a name in the talking head scene on television news channels, but that's about all I know about the guy. I know that in this clip, which is really not much more than a minute long, he just straight up lies.
So why am I suspicious of this fabulous table game that's made people so much money?
Table game?
Well, first, no one knows who created it.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Table game. Is Bitcoin a game to this man?
If it's as good of a game as the stock market, I suppose. I suppose, foreign exchange. Foreign exchange market.
So you're saying that stocks are a game and that it's all gambling?
No, stocks are...
Because I agree with you. Stocks ownership. Are straight up gambling, in
no,
my opinion.
Yeah. Stocks are ownership of a company. Company have people working for them. Bitcoin isn't a stock. Bitcoin is closer to a virtual commodity.
But it's risky still, like stock investing. I mean, even if you know things about the company... You don't know whether they're going to succeed or fail. Yeah, I mean, that's what makes it different from, like, casino gambling. It's not as random as betting on a roulette wheel or something like that, because you can tell yourself going into buying a stock, well, I've done my research. I know who runs this company, and I know what the product is, and I believe that people are going to want to buy this product in the future. His first reason that he mentions, and it's a quick little video, but his first reason was that the creator of Bitcoin is anonymous. And that is actually a good thing. And the reason why is, if nobody finds out who Satoshi Nakamoto is, then they can't kill him, or put him, or her, whoever, in a prison cell. Which you better believe there would be people trying to find and hurt Satoshi Nakamoto. Even if it wasn't the government, other people might be.
Right. If you think about companies or organizations that... have made it so that people can transact in certain ways. It appears as though only gun dealers are the only ones that are immune from getting sort of locked up for the results. They'll throw bartenders in jail for serving drunks. Mm. They'll do all kinds of stuff out there. So you're darn right. They'll blame Satoshi Nakamoto for money laundering and drug dealing that he didn't do.
Right.
There's even people who learn the hard way. Somebody at MIT wrote some software for basically a cryptocurrency miner in the browser, and New Jersey tried to extradite him.
Wow.
From never stepped foot in New Jersey, from what I understand. And
did they succeed?
I believe not, but okay. I think it eventually got
extradited from where?
Massachusetts.
Okay.
Second, no one knows how much the creator reserved for themselves.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, there's this thing with Bitcoin. It's called a public ledger. And now anybody who actually went to Bitcoin.com or the Wikipedia article about Bitcoin would probably learn this. It's one of the most basic things that you can learn about Bitcoin is that it's based on a public ledger, which means that anyone can go and look at it. It's public, and it's a ledger, which means that you can see where everything is. You can't hide things on a public ledger. Now, it certainly is a big ledger. It's a ledger that has existed for 9 years and has a lot of Bitcoin transactions on it over time. But there are some technically adept people who can write tools to help you analyze things like big pieces of data.
Right.
Like,
so what Jim Cramer says here is demonstrably false.
Yes, he's lying.
However, you can presume that Satoshi Nakamoto or whomever that is, or whom, however many people that might be, probably mined some of the early Bitcoins.
Absolutely, he did. Dash is entering into the marketplace here in New Hampshire. We've got it. It's heavy out in the seacoast. It's heavy in Keene, and we're looking to expand it even further because cryptocurrency is here to stay. Whether or not Bitcoin is operable as a currency is irrelevant to the future of the idea of getting money out of the hands of banks, getting out of the hands of governments. And that's what makes people like Jim Cramer nervous. This guy on CNBC who went off today and attacked, or yesterday, I guess, on his show on CNBC and attacked Bitcoin. He's in the background of, you know, they've got the set in the background with like the big screen TVs with logos and things like that on them. In the background, it says Bitcoin, the wild, wild west. Scary, right? The Wild West was a supposedly dangerous, scary place, and you know, people were getting shot and killed and all that.
I'm willing to bet that the Wild Wild West, if you took several of the towns there and then you know, looked at crime over the course of say 30 years and then compared it to, I don't know, where are we talking about? Wall Street? Let's compare it to Manhattan. And I'm willing to bet there's more crime in Manhattan per capita than there was in the Wild Wild West.
Didn't somebody do that at one point?
Yeah, it's called the Mild Mild West, if you choose to look up the story. And I believe it was 10 times New York City. Now, that's not Manhattan. It's the whole, all five boroughs. But 10 times New York City per capita.
So if I ran my own large business and I just wanted to process Bitcoin transactions myself, and I don't know anything about Bitcoin, so I'm just asking, and if I wanted to process those myself, could I just set up my own little mining operation to avoid those fees? Or is that just like ridiculously, you know, resource dependent?
So first of all, the mining operations are the people who get the fees. So the people who are...
Right, so setting up your own won't solve that.
Well, if you set up a mining operation, then you might be able to actually get a piece of some of that. But it's hard because the mining is very, very difficult.
We're not talking about a cheap mining operation.
No,
here.
It's expensive.
You can't get a two-year-old miner and expect to get anything out of that.
You'd have to set up a huge mining operation to make it work because the blocks, I think it's every... You'd have to have blocks coming at you like constantly.
Well, I mean, you
but
can join...
Would I have to accept other people's transactions, or could I just do my own?
No. Okay, so the way that Bitcoin mining works, without getting too technical, because none of it, well, I mean, you could probably get really technical, Chris, but Mark and I were not engineers. But the way the mining works is these miners are competing around the globe to try to find what are called blocks. And the blocks are the places that the transactions that are happening on the network are stored and confirmed and basically written to that public ledger that we were talking about. That's called the blockchain. So any miner that finds the block is given what's called a block reward, which right now is 12.5 Bitcoins.
The best way to avoid the transaction fees is if you get one of the custodial wallets out there. The biggest one is Coinbase. So if there's a transaction that occurs within Coinbase, you won't pay the fee because Coinbase holds all your coins.
You mean if someone else has Coinbase
right.
and they send you Bitcoin on Coinbase?
That's correct.
The problem, though, with recommending Coinbase is this week they've been down quite a bit from
They'll
what
do
I
that again the next time there's a bunch
right.
of activity.
Every time there's a bunch of like a flurry of action in the Bitcoin market and people are buying and selling like crazy, Coinbase just crashes. And or, Mark, I think you suggested they're just flipping a switch and turning things off on purpose.
The Wall Street does that. I mean, you know, the NASDAQ stops trading.
So, I mean, I can't really recommend Coinbase generally. In fact, there was a situation where we were at one of the local places that accepts Bitcoin.
That was terrible.
And it was really embarrassing because there was a guy who was new. I mean, he wasn't new to Bitcoin. This was the funny thing. It was like this guy was experienced. Like, he knew Bitcoin, but he had Coinbase, and he used Coinbase to pay his bill at this Bitcoin-accepting business that we were at, and we're sitting there watching, and there's, you know, a couple of us in line. Luckily, no one else was in the place. We have our meetups here at 2 in the afternoon specifically, so we're, like, likely to be the only people in any given restaurant, because 2 in the afternoon, it's after lunch hour, it's before dinner, so they're not that busy. So luckily, nobody who was a new customer that wasn't with us was waiting, and the guy hit the send button on his wallet, and the screen, the payment software was just sitting there waiting for payment.
It's amazing to me that I would possibly have to accept an IOU in order to be able to take, you know, Bitcoin, and if only they could make it as easy as swiping a credit card. And, you know, I know that it's like a 2.3% plus a 30 cents fee. You know, I just can't imagine, you know, this being attractive to customers.
Yeah.
And then the other concern I have is what happens when yes, Bitcoin continues to just fly high, but what happens when the bottom falls out? And then, you know, I don't even know.
You lose value.
If the price goes down in value, right? But the value is going to just go down tremendously. And so there, to businesses, it just seems like it's got to be a little bit more stable before it will be widely adopted, more than just some sort of an investment.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, which is why we're going around promoting Dash to businesses, but that can also be unstable.
If Satoshi Nakamoto had pre-mined 10,000 Bitcoins, mm-hmm. and this is demonstrably false, okay? Like, this isn't a mistake. This is either really bad reporting or just a smear.
Yeah.
But if Satoshi Nakamoto had pre-mined 10,000 Bitcoins, would it make Bitcoin a lesser invention? And I say no. I mean, Bitcoin's fine the way it is, and it wouldn't make a difference if Satoshi Nakamoto got 10,000 pre-mined Bitcoins in the process. Now,
what if you had a million of them?
What difference does it make?
Well, I guess the big fear is, because some people have claimed this about Dash. They said that Dash had a big pre-mine, and supposedly somebody had said that had happened, but they claimed that they were going to, like, give it away, and I don't know if they ever did or not, but this is one of the big objections to Dash, is that there was this pre-mine, which the creator of Dash has access to, and the big fear is that person is engaging in what they call a pump and dump scheme, where
for Dash,
that's what the claim is.
And they're darn rich at this point. We're beyond pump and dump.
So right, that's what was my question is. Well, I mean, if this is a con, it's a pretty long con. I mean, for somebody to be pumping something for 3 or 4 years straight, only to then sell it all. The idea, Mark, is that they would sell it all at once. There's an article from back in 2013 where a researcher named Sergio, I don't know his last name, but he actually went and analyzed the blockchain, and he believes that Satoshi has a million Bitcoins. But again, you know, whether he's got 50 Bitcoins or a million Bitcoins, either way,
that's still
a fraction of the Bitcoins
that exist now.
It's a good fraction. I mean, 1/16 is still a good chunk of, coin. But most of those original Bitcoins have never been moved, and some theories say Satoshi Nakamoto is dead. If it was one person, there's a theory that one of the people who might have been Satoshi was very, very ill and has passed away.
Right. There are articles back in, I don't remember, 2014 or something about this guy that...
been a decade almost.
Yeah, and there's a good chance that he might have been in on it in some way, shape, or form. He's dead. Those coins haven't moved, and... At this point, we have no evidence that those coins will ever move.
Right. If Satoshi Nakamoto was just one person, because if it was more than one person, then presumably more than one person has the keys to those coins. But if it was just one person, and he's the only one who had access to the keys, and he never gave a wife or a child or something like that access to his keys, then that million Bitcoins, it's gone forever.
Third, there's virtually no transparency into the underlying system, none whatsoever.
That is a lie, sir. The entire Bitcoin system is as transparent as it could possibly be.
It's the whole reason that I like Bitcoins and I like cryptocurrency.
You're a big open source guy.
I am. And there's a lot of cryptocurrencies I don't want to touch or tools surrounding it that I won't touch because they're not transparent.
Right.
The source code's not available. Right.
You want to be able to audit. You are a programmer, so you could go in and you can look at the code and you can see, is there a backdoor in here? Mm-hmm. Is the programmer, the original, does Satoshi Nakamoto have some sort of hack where he can, you know, come in with a master key and unlock everybody's Bitcoin? The answer is no.
No, exactly. And it's not just programmers. There's security people who have analyzed the code for, you know, explicitly for vulnerabilities. And,
audits.
And
it can be audited anytime.
Uh-huh, exactly. And it's not, you don't have to trust a particular auditor or a particular programmer.
You can take the code, compile it yourself, because mm-hmm. you could, if you were really concerned, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know if they had put in a backdoor into the executable program, right? Like, if they'd taken the open source code, modified it, put in a backdoor, and put that into the executable.
That's a good question. It depends. There is something, deterministic builds, they're called.
Okay.
And I don't know if they're doing deterministic builds, but if they are, then you can build it yourself mm-hmm. and compare it
And like do a hash on the one that you build and the one they build.
So you can actually confirm that the binary that you've got, the program that you're running, is the same as the code that you've compiled.
Right.
Fourth, there's no government backing, obviously.
Thank
there are no underlying assets backing it up.
There's no government backing. Well, that is why people like Bitcoin. There's a lot of people who don't want the government involved with their money.
Yeah.
That's a perk.
The just think about how much the dollar's been devalued since 1913 when the Federal Reserve created the Federal Reserve note.
Right.
And I want to ask you...
That wasn't a silver certificate back then?
There were times...
It became a Federal Reserve note later when they took
the silver away. I don't know that they were always silver certificates. There were silver certificates, certainly. But look, go ahead and do your mileage may vary. Most of the devaluation occurred in after the early 70s with the Bretton Woods Accords and the decoupling of gold from the dollar. Mm-hmm. And that's when most of it occurred. And you remember the long gas lines and all that stuff during the crisis. But nonetheless, government and currency isn't just not necessarily an indication of a good thing. It is an indication of a bad thing.
Absolutely.
Government currency, when those words go together.
It's a history. I mean, not just the U.S. government, but government currency, fiat currency, is a history of debasement. The final point from Jim Cramer.
Stop, and there's no military support for the Bitcoin system, unlike real currencies.
Did he just say there's no military support?
Right, from a country. Remember, he was complaining about it not being backed by a nation. And the suggestion is that money needs military backing.
Wow.
But I would ask you about this. Costa Rica has no military.
That's right.
What is its money backed by?
Well, they use the dollar.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's backed by the U.S. military then. There are plenty of places that don't have, that aren't using their military to back their money. Where did this notion come from?
I don't know. That's a new one to me.
There are no underlying assets backing it up, and there's no military support for the Bitcoin system, unlike real currencies. Fifth, despite the allegiance its buyers swear to a blockchain, another great buzzword, the secret way to...
Blockchain's just a buzzword, folks. Don't pay any attention to what the technology actually is behind.
It's not the most formative technology introduced in the last decade. No,
it's not being actually adopted by many of the very banks he's shilling for behind the scenes. No, don't pay no attention to the technology behind the curtain here of Bitcoin, which is blockchain, the public ledger that is immutable and decentralized and distributed across thousands of locations around the world, which basically means that fraud is impossible with Bitcoin, unlike with your Federal Reserve system, which is basically built on fraud. Mm. So, yeah, let's continue.
Buzzword. The secure way to transact this with blockchain, at the end of the day, you know what this is? It's software. And what do we know about software? All software can be hacked.
Where do you start?
Well,
if Bitcoin could be hacked, why hasn't it been hacked?
That's where that would be the first question that one would ask.
Yeah. Now, I did just see a headline. I don't know if it's true. I didn't look at the story, claiming that there's a new Intel quantum computer which could crack Bitcoin. Now, maybe we will see the day when Bitcoin's cryptographic security is breakable.
Smart people can say stupid things too, and when they do, you should ignore them.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, smart people are only smart as the stuff that's coming, the information that they get. I can't, it's hard for me to imagine that he is this uninformed. No, Bitcoin cannot be hacked.
That's
no,
correct.
Jim Cramer, Bitcoin cannot be hacked.
If it could, it would have been because the prize is huge. I mean, hackers want to go after something worthwhile,
yeah.
Right? You don't want to waste your time with something that's not worth, the risk of prison over. So, you want to accomplish something with your hack. And if you could hack Bitcoin, you would have access to tremendous wealth. So there's plenty of incentive to do it.
Sure. The easy thing to do would be to place a short sell order, hack Bitcoin, show that you've hacked it, and then watch the Bitcoin price plummet.
Mm.
Wham! You're on a beach in Tahiti, surrounded by women with Learjets and limos for the rest of your life. But no, Jim Cramer said on his TV show that it's hackable.
So, Chris, you brought in a story. I've also got a censorship-related story. Yours is out of the EU, where EU countries are coming down on, what, technology provider types, web providers?
Yeah, basically.
What's going on?
Google and Apple and basically Twitter and everybody who has any kind of platform. The EU is urging to remove what they refer to as extremist content.
Now, that's what I want to know is, what does the EU consider to be extremist?
Well, that's a ever-changing
target.
target there. So I actually don't know that it's been defined anywhere. But here, let's...
We know it when we see it.
Yeah, right? So EU urges internet companies to do more to remove extremist content. Internet groups such as Facebook, Google's, YouTube, and Twitter need to do more to stern the proliferation of extremist content on their platforms, the European Commission said after a meeting on Wednesday.
Didn't I hear, I saw a headline today that said something about Google has like 10,000 people who are going to start regulating content on their platforms.
They just hired, yeah. I don't know if they hired 10,000. I think it was kind of worded kind of weird, and
yeah.
I think they're going to increase it by a couple thousand to 10,000.
I see.
And okay. It's like, I don't know, 10% of their...
Finally, your children will be safe on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. This isn't the first time that, corporations, ISPs, and other entities have been threatened by governments. I know in Canada, and I think it was the 90s, they were threatened. They're like, if you don't implement censorship lists, we will force it on you. And
right,
because
Canada doesn't have
all of them.
They don't allow hate speech.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I know in Canada, another thing that happened, again, probably in the 90s, Yahoo... I think they had a Yahoo. It was kind of equivalent of eBay, and they basically had Nazi memorabilia.
Okay.
That they, I guess, was on the auction site, that Yahoo auction site, and I guess Canada's court basically said that you have to take it down, and even though they're in the U.S., like even stuff in the U.S., so it was applying their rules to outside of Canada.
That's
like
annoying.
To the US version of the site. And it just was ridiculous. And I think there was another case here recently, and I don't remember if this was in the United States or it might be ongoing. It might actually be in the United States where something similar. But not in relation to this, but where the United States has said you have to comply even though you're out. Oh yeah, it's is it with Google? No, it's with Microsoft. Microsoft has basically stored their emails in I'm trying to think. It was in Europe and one of these European countries.
China's World Internet Conference, which featured Apple Incorporated's Tim Cook and Google's Sundar Pichai, they made their first appearances at the China World Internet Conference, bringing star power to a gathering the Chinese government uses to promote its strategy of tight controls online. Apple's chief executive officer gave a surprise keynote at the opening ceremony on Sunday, calling for future internet and AI technologies to be infused with privacy, security, and humanity. The same day, one of China's most senior officials called for more aggressive government involvement online to combat terrorism and criminals. Wang Huning, one of seven men on China's top decision-making body, even called for a global response team to go well beyond its borders. It was Cook's second appearance in China in 2 months, following a meeting with President Xi Jinping in October. The iPhone maker has most of its products manufactured in the country and is trying to regain market share in smartphones against local competitors such as Huawei Technologies Company. The theme of this conference, developing a digital economy for openness and shared benefits, is a vision that we at Apple share. We are proud to have worked alongside many of our partners in China to help build a community that will join a common future in cyberspace. The Wuzhen conference, which until this year has had a primarily local presence, is designed to globally promote the country's vision of a more censored and controlled internet. You have to protect the unpopular speech in order to protect all speech, because if you don't protect all speech, it's really just a question of when they're going to come after you. The old poem from Pastor Martin Niemöller, first they came after the communists and I wasn't a communist, so I didn't speak up. Then they came after the trade unionists and then so on. And then eventually nobody was left when they finally came after him, was the idea. So even when somebody is saying something that's offensive to you, if you care about freedom, and maybe you don't, but if you do care about freedom, even if that thing is offensive, you should stand up for that person's right to say it, because otherwise you could be next.
Every good idea that we currently possess in today's culture was a bad idea in the past.
Mm.
I mean, you're not going to see evolution of ideas if we don't allow what we consider to be bad ideas today. Now, I don't know what those ideas are. I'm certain I've got some of them. The ideas of human freedom are pretty repugnant to those that are thoroughly invested in the the government continuing its power.
Sure. Code is speech. You are literally writing something down. You are writing words that, when compiled, turn into a program that is usable. Am I right about this? Code's freedom of speech, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. It should be. There have been some very bad precedents in regards to this matter.
Really?
Yes.
In the U.S.?
In the U.S. There was a case involving DECSS, which was a program to crack DVD encryption in the 90s. And, basically a magazine, a hacker magazine called 2600, was hosting the source code, and the courts basically... because of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, we're like, you can't say this. You can't host this. And so they took down the source code, and then they started linking to other people who were hosting the code. And then they finally said, you can't link to this. And so they stopped linking to it, and they just had text of the link. Anyway,
Love 2600.
Yeah, it was a great magazine. But
They're not around anymore?
No, they're still around.
They're still quarterly, right? Hacker Quarterly?
Yeah. And but eventually they did have to, they lost, and they decided not to appeal because it would set a bad precedent if they kept appealing it. And so they were like, well, you guys are clearly biased against us because we're a Hacker Quarterly. And
And then they put, what was it, Barrett Brown? I forget his last name, but there was a guy who had posted a link.
Again, same thing. Link. Right. He posted in a chat room. Yep. And
it sent him to prison. Headline from CNBC, the world's biggest banks reportedly want to halt the Bitcoin futures launch. Remember we talked, I think it was last week, about the big headline that said that the NASDAQ... And there's other organizations around the U.S. and I think around the world that are going to be adding what they call Bitcoin futures. Now, I'm not an investor, so I don't really know what that means. I know it's not actually Bitcoin, though. It's some sort of a bet on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Sure.
Isn't it basically an agreement?
It's an agreement to deliver.
So it's not the actual Bitcoin. Like, it's somebody might... Is it, Mark, you probably have a better understanding, you sound like you have a pretty good foundation understanding of this, but isn't it something like it's a contract for Bitcoin, kind of like that, and it's also a prediction on the price of what it will be?
Well, you would want to predict in order to, for instance, I tell you I will deliver you a Bitcoin in 3 months for $20,000. If you're taking that bet, you're betting that Bitcoin will be worth more than $20,000, and I'm betting... that Bitcoin will be worth less than $20,000. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's just straight up gambling, right?
It's not. It's delivery.
I did mention the pedestrian activity crossing before. It's called a hawk, H-A-W-K or something. I did mention it, but I think it could really help.
Is this one of those things where the pedestrian like presses a button and it starts flashing? At the flashing lights at the drivers to let them know to stop.
Right.
Okay. But yeah, I've seen those here in Keene, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, you do have those? You do have those. They're not them. The ones in Phoenix, and you know that we're number one in bicycle fatalities. I think I'm talking about it because there's
poor
people
bicycles.
Who's number one in bicycle fatalities? You just said Phoenix, didn't you?
Albuquerque is. We got the top
city in bicycle.
You're checking Sarah because she frequently is incorrect on her claims.
She thinks everybody's dying of everything in Albuquerque.
But sometimes she's right on those claims.
Yeah, that's our rating. And we kill about 9 bicyclists for our population. I think it's 700,000 people here. So it's per capita, we're number one.
Hmm.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.